The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Men of Letters, a supernatural podcast.
This is Dad's single most valuable possession. Everything he knows about every evil thing is in here. He's passed it on to us. I think he wants us to pick up where he left off. You know, saving people, hunting things, the family business.
Storm's coming. And you boys, your daddy, you are smack in the middle of it.
House rules, Sammy. Driver picks the music. Shotgun shuts his cake hole.
No chick flick moments.
All right, jerk.
Bitch.
That Constance chick, what a bitch!
Or you think it's shooting Casper in the face, you freak.
Oh, eat me. No, wait. You actually might.
Hope your apple pie is freaking worth it!
Hey, Supernatural fans. Welcome back to Men of Letters, a Supernatural retrospective podcast. We again are your monster hunting hosts, Tim and Katie. We hope you're enjoying your summer so far. Tonight, this jerk and I tackle episodes 19, Providence, and episode 20, Dead Man's Blood. So, Jerky, how the hell are you doing tonight?
I don't know, bitch. Why you gotta be calling me names?
Well, how's your summer treating you? And the fam?
I'm tired. The sun is deceptive because I'm cooking dinner at 8 o'clock. I'm like, why is it 8 o'clock? It's supposed to be like 5 out. It's
yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
How about you guys?
Oh, yeah, my kids are the same way with the sun. They're like, but we have to go to bed. It's 8:30, but it's still sunny out. And they can hear other kids playing in the neighborhood. And I'm like, yeah, you got to go to bed. We're going to bed. So, yeah, the kids are doing well. Summer is in full swing. My in-laws are in town from Romania, so they are busy doing all the work that I don't want to do around the house. So, they're currently making a garden in our backyard. So,
that's nice.
We'll have some fresh cucumbers and tomatoes and hot peppers. And yeah, life is good. It's just fine. I can't complain.
You can leave the complaining to me.
Yeah. Sure. You're a professional complainer on a whole.
Oh my god.
On a whole other level.
Complaining.
You got your master's in BS from complaining.
Yeah. I do.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so again, really can't complain. Just working hard on Men of Letters and also on That Horror Show podcast. So yeah, it's good. We got a lot of things coming down, coming out soon, and we hope you guys will be enjoying those episodes very shortly. I'm currently editing a lot. So
okay, Timmy, let's get this show on the road.
All right, but first let's pause for our first Speakeasy commercial break, and we'll roll that trailer for the WBCW trailer Providence. So don't lose your heads. We'll be right back after this. Hello, is there anyone out there? Hey. Do you like horror movies, television shows, and really messed up stuff, and like to have a laugh or two? Then tune in to us, That Horror Show Podcast, with me, Tim Kasda.
And me, Chris Koenig. We cover everything from cult and hard-to-find flicks to classic and contemporary horror films, and everything in between.
Oh, God! So be sure to tune in to us every month for a unique and interesting look at the horror movie genre.
Run, Tim! Run! Oh, look! An isolated cabin in the woods! We should be safe there!
Sounds good, Chris. You can find us at the speakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. And of course, our official website at www.thathorrorshowpodcast.podbean.com and the official Facebook page. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Player FM.
So be sure to check us out and the rest of the great podcasts at the Speakeasy Podcast Network, where talk is cheap, and so are we!
Thursday, only 6 fresh supernaturals are left. A family, together at last, is closer than ever to the truth.
I just want this to be over.
The journey continues to the unforgettable season finale.
They've got Dad.
Fresh Supernatural on the WB Thursday.
Okay, Providence, directed by Phil Sergica and written by David Ehrman, with an original air date of April 13th, 2006. Oh, wow, that was one day after my birthday. So, after a young couple is found brutally murdered in upstate New York within a locked house, the brothers investigate and learn from their father's journal that similar deaths have occurred in the area over the past few decades. All the couple's belongings were taken to an auction house, so they check to see if a ghost may have attached itself to an object. after asking Sarah Blake, played by Taylor Cole, the daughter of the auction house owner, out on a date, Sam is able to get copies of the provenances. Dean discovers that a painted portrait from 1910 of Isaiah Merchant's family had belonged to all the other murdered victims, and that Merchant had killed his entire family and then himself. Realizing that the painting is haunted, the brothers burn it, but it later repairs itself. Dean tracks down Merchant's body and cremates it, but when Sam and Sarah attempt to destroy the painting again, the ghost of Merchant's daughter emerges from it, having been the true killer all along. Dean finds an antique doll with a girl's hair in the mausoleum, and the ghost disappears after he burns it. After the painting is finally destroyed, the brothers leave town, but not before Sam kisses Sarah goodbye. So let's discuss provenance. Katie, what did you think?
Oh my god, I really like this episode. It was super good. I don't know. I really, like, it was, I thought it was well written. I thought it was well acted. I loved the story behind the painting. The painting was creepy as hell. You know, overall, I really enjoyed the story. And some of the back and forth with the boys, of course. It's always, like, these creepy, you know, kind of scary stories, but then they lighten it up with all this, you know, back and forth with these brothers. So it's good. It's good times.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode a lot. I mean, I really loved this dark and gritty episode. And honestly, this episode ranks right up there with episodes like The Benders and Scarecrow and Bloody Mary. And yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it. And what I really enjoyed was the character of also. What I also really enjoyed was the character of Sarah Blake, played by Taylor Cole. And after seeing it for the first time, I wanted her to come back as a recurring character. I wouldn't know how they would do it at that time, but I always wanted to see her back in some capacity. And it honestly never happened. I think she came back for one episode, like, later in the seasons. But nothing like I expected. And I really, really liked the dinner scene, which particularly sold me, where she can see Sam is overwhelmed at the wine list and possibly the cost. And she says, "I don't know about Romeo, but I'll have a beer," you know, making Sam feel more comfortable.
She's really good at, like, that. Her character and the way she portrays this character is excellent, because she does. There's no, like, no nonsense. She cuts right through the bullshit. She seems like she's a refined character. She's also got this classy attitude, which she's willing to get down to the nitty-gritty. I mean, when they're digging the graves and stuff, she's like, it's so uncomfortable how comfortable you guys are.
I actually had that written in my notes. That was my favorite line. You're uncomfortably comfortable with this.
Right?
Oh my god, yeah. And I love, there was one scene where Dean says, "Marry that girl."
So, yes, and I was like, he should. That's what he should be doing.
Getting back to what you're saying, I really like the backstory of the painting with Isaiah Merchant and the orphan daughter that he and his wife adopted. And it was just a creepy little sick horror story. And there was one scene that stood out in particular to me, was when Evelyn, she was the old lady that bought the painting after, I believe it was Mark and his wife got murdered in the opening sequence. Telesca and Ann Telesca. Anyway, after they were murdered, the painting was then purchased by Evelyn, who was, I guess, a family friend of Sarah's and her dad's. And she bought the painting, and then you see her reading a book in front of the fireplace, and all of a sudden you see her reading glasses, like, on a table stand next to her, and you see a little image run by laughing with the razor blade flashing in the glasses, and I'm like, that is awesome.
Yeah, and then, you know, Dean is like, don't! Because, you know, he kind of gets what's going on, and, like, he sees that, you know, he knows that she's dead, even though they're like, Evelyn, and, yeah, it was really good. And, I mean, beforehand, when they go, and it's, like, all these really, like, high-end classy cars, and then you see their, you know, Impala that's, like, full of dirt and stuff, and they're going into this place, they're totally, like, dressed down. Dean insults the guy who's in charge of the whole joint.
Yeah, calls him Chuckles.
He asks for champagne. Yeah, he was like, yeah, I'll have some champagne.
Chuckles.
And, Chuckles, right, I love that. And Sam's like, dude, he's not a waiter.
Yeah.
So, and he's just like, you know, Dean is so...
Yeah.
Just classless and jamming shit into his face, and they talk to Sarah, and... then they get kicked out. But I really like how she's like, he said, he promised he wouldn't sell it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and now, you know, she's all kind of pissed because he sold it to Evelyn.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but actually getting back to the beginning of the episode, I thought the opening sequence before they play the supernatural or show the supernatural text or the intro, I really love that, like, gotcha scene where the yuppie couples are, you know, locking up and they're gonna go do their marital deed because they're half drunk on champagne,
right?
And she's like, "I'll start without you." He's like, "Okay, I'm gonna go lock up."
I know. I was like, "Really?"
Yeah.
Starts without their friend,
their
whatever,
lady. Their spouse, and yeah, he was like, why is it all wet and mushy in here? And then you cut to the blood, and he falls down crying, or falls down, you know, shrieking. And then they cut to the blood splatter on the pillow or the nightstand or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed like every scene and every moment of this episode. I want to say it's probably in my top five of season one.
Oh my gosh, I agree. I mean, because they wanted to check out the house. To mm-hmm. see if any of that's from where the couple lived, and no, everything's been sent to auction. And you know, Dean had a rough night.
Yes, let's talk about that for a moment.
His lady friend he met at the bar.
Yes,
and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, hungover, sitting in the car, and then all of a sudden Sam comes up and honks the horn, yeah. And you know, startles him, and he's like, "Not cool, man."
Well, yeah. Well, in the previous scene, he was picking up two chicks trying to get Sam to join in the fun, and he said, and Sam turns to Dean, he's like, "What are you telling those ladies over there that were rock stars or that were music producers or television producers or something like that?" He goes, "Yeah, reality TV scouts or something like that."
I know, right?
Yeah, so Dean got some, but he paid the price the next morning.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, you know, as we go through this whole season, and even through the stretch of, you know, to the end of the running of the show, it's like, honestly, I wonder, like, how many times has Dean got tested, you know? Like, have you had the clap, Dean? Are you using protection? Because he's such a man whore.
He is such a man whore.
Like, really? I know that's, like, super random, but I was just like, I wonder if he's got, like, cootie crotch or whatever.
Sorry, cootie crotch.
Yeah, that's a new one. Oh, dirty dick, cootie crotch, whatever you want to call it.
Dirty Dick Dean.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, Dean. Well, Dean has an angel on his shoulder. He just doesn't know it yet at this point. So,
right.
I think in the end of season, whenever Castiel makes his, or whenever Dean's raised from the hell. We're gonna get into that later, but you know, yeah. He's been rehymenated, as he said.
Yeah, raised from perdition.
But yeah, I honestly loved the show. Again. And there wasn't a lot of deaths. There was three deaths. We got the Evelyn towards the end of it, and then we've got the couple at the beginning. So
yeah.
it wasn't necessarily very bloody, but just very, very kind of scary, honestly, in my opinion. I really liked it. I thought their final confrontation between where they're locked in Evelyn's house, just to double check.
Yeah.
The make sure the painting is... the spirit has been released when they think it was first Isaiah Merchant's after the salt and burn his bones. And then Dean's outside in the car playing some sort of love song where he said, "Sam, you got to get with this girl."
Yeah, like, make your move.
And he makes and he kind of, like, you know, makes the movement where he, like, cut it out, like, with, you know, putting his hand across his throat. Like, knock it off, dude. And then he's locked in the house because the spirit is obviously the little girl. And
yeah, because they had to go. They went and burned the
Isaiah Merchant's body.
Yeah, because they went. So I don't know. We're like skipping all over the place, but I feel, you know. So they went and they were in the mausoleum for the family.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. After they burnt the body of Isaiah Merchant's, and then they took him to the mausoleum. Correct, I believe.
No, because they went to the mausoleum. They saw that only, like, there were four urns there.
Ah, yes.
Seen, like, the creepy doll and the little teddy bear for the boy, and then Sarah was saying how that's, like, during that time, that was customary to bury the child with their favorite thing or, you know, put it on their grave or whatever. And so they're questioning, you know, what the heck? Where's the father's body? So then they went to do some research at some library or village hall or whatever the heck, and, you know, Sam and Sarah are having a moment on the bench.
Yeah.
And she's like, how is he even getting this, you know? And he's like, well, we lie or we pay him off or whatever. And then they find out he was put in a pauper's grave because the family was too embarrassed
right, to
have him buried with them. And so they went and, you know, took care of the bones, and then lo and behold, it wasn't even him.
Right. But let's talk about that scene why Dean is using his nefarious ways to obtain the information on Isaiah Merchant's body. There's a scene where they're talking together, and after Sam and Sarah had their dinner, I think a couple of nights before, and she's talking about, she's like, call me crazy, but there's something between us, right? He said, yes, and I really love this the scene between them, because it shows how Sam is still feeling so much guilt over Jessica's death from episode one, and he's carrying that guilt with him and saying, you know, I'm not talking about a heartbreak where, you know, it's, you know, a couple of some sad songs and a tub of Haagen-Dazs. It's, you know,
yeah.
This is life and death. I've lost, you know, I don't think he doesn't say he lost his mother, but he lost, you know, his girlfriend. And she's talking about him like, we kind of got to get over that, you know, you don't want to be in this, because she was telling, revealing stuff about herself, about her mother dying and how she went into this cocoon and she didn't want to be, you know, she just wanted to let the world go by. And she's like, there's no way to live. And she's really trying to help Sam kind of bust out of that kind of like funk.
And yeah.
I really feel that Sam still felt cursed even throughout this episode until the very end. And I it was so many freaking layers, and it was done with such class, and all the while telling a good horror story. I'm like, this is why it's kind of one of my favorites. I don't mean to wax ecstatic about it, but it is.
Yeah, definitely, because there's like so many different components of the show, and it, you know, everything was done so well. You know, so kudos to the director on this one, that they really did such a good effort, and they put so many things into this 45-minute show, you know, where, they talk about Sam's complicated background, and then this lady who comes along and, you know, piques his interest, and, you know, you could tell that he's interested, but he, you know, he's kind of beating himself down, like he doesn't deserve
right, a
relationship because people will get hurt.
And you see the interactions between Dean and Sam at the hotel, where he's like, dude, you need to. It's not just about getting some. This is about, you know, making a connection. He goes, I need, you know, he could see Sam is hurting and carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah, he's really struggling with it.
Yeah, and I really liked that scene between Dean and Sam. And I think that's what, and this is what has created, what helped the longevity of the show. I mean, we're going on the 15th and final season. I'm like, this is like the little moments. It's, yeah, you got the monsters. Yeah, you got the, you know, blood and guts, and you got the folklore and all this other kind of cool, like, stuff, end of the world stuff, where these two brothers would die for each other and have died for each other. But it's these little moments that I kind of think really help propel the show more than, you know, the bigger moments. You know?
Right. Can we just stop and talk about the motel for a second?
Oh, yes! I'm so glad you were going to bring that, because I wanted to bring it up, too. The Disco Stew's 1970s.
I know! It was so, like, they were, like, parked outside. It kind of looks like a wreck from the outside. And then they walk in the door, and they play this little
disco,
like, clip of music. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, look at this shiny shit. Like, all the, like, the bed sheets and the quilts weren't funky, but it was like, I don't know if it was a fleur-de-lis or something like that on there. And then you, like, pan over to the right side of the room, and there's an 8-track player.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you noticed that.
I did. I totally did. And the disco balls everywhere.
Yes! And the shiny, like, room separator with all the
right,
little circles and things.
I love the generic disco music they played in the background too, just for that, like, maybe 10 seconds. And
yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Then Sam and Dean kind of look at each other and go, huh.
Yeah.
They looked at each other.
Like, you see the keychain with, like, you know, the classic, Saturday Night Fever kind of pose on right. there. It's like wiggling in the door a minute, and then there's just this, you know, huge reveal, which I don't think they do that a whole lot. Like, with the rooms, they're kind of like, okay, this one's Western-themed, or this one's, you know, they're pretty basic, but I don't know why they decided to go with this really, like, jazzed-up room.
Yeah,
it was that was, like, part of the thing, too, you know? It was, like...
The room was a character and part of the story, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was pretty funny. And yeah, most of the rooms, like you mentioned, are just very basic or they're kind of run down. But every once in a while, they'll go out of their way to surprise even the brothers and the audience.
Yeah, they like, here, there's the room. It's a character. Welcome to the party. You know?
Welcome to the freak show.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but yeah, I don't know what else I can really say about the show. I mean, you know, it turns out to be the little girl. And what there's another thing where the where Sam and Dean are locked in the house. Now we're bouncing again. We're bouncing around. So you got to have to kind of watch the episode recently to kind of follow our train of thought or whatever you want to call it. But Sam and Dean are locked in Evelyn's house. They're battling the spirit. And he's like, "We gotta find iron." And Dean is trying to break down the door.
They're not both in the house.
Sam and Sarah are in the house. Sarah. Dean is outside. Did I say Dean?
You said Sam and Dean were in the house.
Oh, sorry.
Sarah.
Yeah. Sorry, Sarah and Sam are in the house. Wow, Sarah, Sam. Say that 10 times really fast. Right. Sarah and Sam are in the house battling the orphan, you know, killer, the orphan that's a killer, and. Dean can't get in the house. He's trying to, and he's like, "Well, break down the door." He's like, "I'm sorry, I forgot my battering ram in the car."
Yeah, right.
And so they have to keep the spirit on its toes. They're trying to find. Obviously, we know from the lore the iron. They need to find iron. They need to find salt. Sam can't find salt, and he goes, "What's up with all these low sodium freaks? There's no salt in the house."
I know.
So
right?
That's when Sarah says, "Oh, you know, the doll. The doll is the key." He's like, "Well, that's very that's fantastic information right now, Sarah, but we were trying to stay alive." She goes, "No, burn the hair, or, you know, because you were talking about how everything's been destroyed and what's left to burn in salt." And she's like, "Well, there's the doll in the mausoleum that's made out of human hair back in the day. That's what they did back in the day. They made the doll in the child's likeness, including using its own real hair." The child's own real hair. So Dean drives all the way back to the mausoleum. And he's in there, and he's trying to break it down. He's trying to punch it, and he tries to use the butt of the handle of the gun.
Butt.
Yeah, the gun.
And then he turns around, and he's like,
"What am I thinking?" Or
"You idiot."
And then he shoots the glass. And here's another little touch that that I thought was really cool. Normally, in these situations, when the good guys are trying to, you know, finally kill the evil spirits or ghosts or whatever. You know, he pulls out his trusty lighter and lights up really quickly. Even most monster movies and horror movies, whenever the hero needs to try to light something on fire, even if they're standing in water, they can light the lighter really quickly. But Dean is standing there, and it took him like 6 times to get the lighter to click over and make the spark.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really nice touch to add more drama to the scene.
Yeah, definitely. It stresses you out a little bit. It's like, come on already!
Right. And this is before we know that the boys can die, but they always come back. where we know life and death doesn't really matter too much in the supernatural universe, because if it's Sam and Dean, you know somehow, some way, that they will always be taken care of. Their souls will go on.
Right.
They will be brought back to life.
Right, and that was good. It was, you know, they're backing up. Sarah and Sam are backing up into the corner. They hit the, you know, the fireplace tools, and then they find the poker and start, you know, swinging at her. So I feel like it was a good, like, back and forth and dramatic scene. You know, I really enjoyed it. And I know this is silly, but when Dean is using the lighter to try and light the doll's hair on fire, you got to think that these guys who work in the sound department, because you wouldn't hear that on film. Like, you know, there's a guy who's trying to click the lighter, and they got the sound like spot on. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of the...
So, like the,
I'm trying...
The
I'm,
audio guys or whatever.
Yeah, you, there's an... Yeah, there's an official title for that.
Yeah.
And I've seen them do it before, but I'm drawing a blank on it right now. But, yeah, where they actually watch television shows and they in that and or movies and they sync up the audio, like the door closing or opening, or there's a cannon shooting or something, or even just walking across footsteps, different footsteps and stuff like that. Gosh, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but yeah, I know what you're talking about, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're using a Zippo, like I can tell, like,
right?
That's a Zippo. It's not a crappy one. It's a real. Like Zippo, because when they click it and then he just starts to try and light it.
And honestly,
that's good, like small stuff, like I appreciate.
And not even getting off on a small little tangent. That would be such a freaking cool job to have. Imagine you watching a TV show or movie and then adding those particular sound effects. That would be a great job to have.
Yeah,
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, sometimes they don't use like you know traditional things, and like when they're stabbing something, they have to make these like. Punching sounds like they're using a piece of meat or like a melon or some random thing that you would never think of.
Yeah, I mean,
and then you know,
for lack of a better term, we'll just call it the sound effects department or sound effects department. But there is an actual real name for these guys or people that do this, and it's in the sound department. Just don't know what the name of it is. But
audio awesomeness.
Audio awesomeness. What's that would be great for your resume. What did you do? Yeah, I'm audio awesomeness. Just check with the sound department. They'll know what I'm talking about.
You can check my references with Dirty Dick Dean.
Oh man. Yeah, so I don't know what else we could really talk about this episode. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I mean, I think we pretty much covered it as far as, like, you know, like, how it was set up and all the different, you know, just the little things that just make it what it is. So the kids were in the, you know, watching with me, and they were just, you could hear them gasping at different sounds and stuff throughout the show. And I was like, yes, my kids love this shit, and they're gasping. You know, that makes it so much better when you can watch something with your kids and they're getting really into it as much as you're into it. And it's, you know, I haven't watched, you know, the beginning episodes for such a long time, and rewatching them, you know, for doing this podcast with you, it's just, you know, including my kids and my husband and stuff, it's a lot of fun for me to relive this stuff. But to be able to like introduce it to them and see what their reactions are.
Yeah, that is awesome. That's awesome. I can't wait for Nate and Gabby to be of age to watch this. Nate's almost there. He's got about another maybe 2 years or so. Because every time I think I want to see him something or he can watch something, then they show the cut of the grandma losing her head. I'm like, okay, maybe not so much, maybe not just yet. But he'll be there another year or so. Gabby will have a little bit longer, but he knows the show. He knows all the characters. In fact, I think I let him watch maybe just a Scooby-Doo episode, and even that one was a little. There was some questionable material for a little bit for little kids, but he liked it.
You're such a good dad. I remember Andrew was like 6, maybe, or 7, something like that, and he had like we went to get a haircut, and he's like, "Mom, I want my haircut like Dean." And so afterwards, we went to Culver's, and I have this picture of him, and he says, "Mom, I look just like Dean." And I was like, okay. Oh. I mean, maybe it could have been like 7 or 8.
Okay.
But still, it was like, I couldn't push these kids away from the TV. They were just enthralled. They like scary stuff, and they get, you know, and it doesn't really affect them. And if it does affect them, we talk about it and stuff. But to have, you know, even like Ellie just turned 9 and she's like super into the show.
That's
so
cool.
You know, I'm a bad parent, but these kids love it, and it's hard to keep them away from it.
Oh no, well Ellie, that's 9 is, well, you know, that's fine. I mean, I guess it depends on what you think your kids can handle. And I just know of certain things, even PG-13 stuff, sometimes Nate is cool with it and sometimes not so much. it just depends. I mean, the kids are wonky that way. I mean, I have a nephew of mine that he won't watch some even like scarier like Scooby-Doo episodes or Scooby-Doo episodes because he would get a little scared, and he's older than Nate. So kids are different, you know. It's all good.
Yeah. I think it depends on what the kid can handle.
Yeah. So I mean, I've got nothing left to say about this episode. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved it. It's definitely a major thumbs up for me. Katie, I think you'd feel the same way.
Absolutely. Like, if I could give this episode a hug, I would. I loved it so much.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the songs used in this episode. Thanks to the fine people over at TuneFine.com. The songs used in this episode are 1, Nighttime by Steve Carlson. 2, 4 Romantic Pieces by Antonio Dvorak. 3, One More Once by Black Toast Music. 4, Bad Time by Grand Funk Railroad. And 5, Decapitation Variations by Christopher Lentz. And I just have some fun facts, Katie, for this episode. 1, when looking at the painting together, Dean, played by Jensen Ackles, calls Sam, Jared Padalecki, Jared instead of Sam. He actually admitted to this on a panel at a convention and said that the editing team must have missed it, so it stayed in the episode in the final cut. So, I don't know, did you catch that, Katie? I didn't catch it.
I didn't, but now I'm going to go back and watch.
Yeah, so go back and rewatch it right now.
When we're done, I'm going to be like zipping through my Netflix screenshots so I can find it.
Yeah, so 2, Sam references the book The Da Vinci Code, written by Dan Brown, when Dean suggests that there's a possible hidden clues in the cursed painting. Dean doesn't understand what Sam means when he says he's still waiting for the movie on that one. The Da Vinci Code premiered in theaters a month after this episode aired. 3, when Sarah says that the family portrait is in the American primitive art style, Sam corrects her by saying the style is more Grant Wood. Grant Wood is an American painter whose most famous work is the American Gothic from 1930. So if you're an art and history buff, that is for you guys. So after Sam plays Kissy Face with Sarah, Sam and Dean head to Boulder, Colorado, which is a long haul at 1,792.3 miles away. Thankfully, the boys have a week to get there. So before we sink our teeth into Dead Man's Blood, let's pause for our final speakeasy commercial break, and then we'll roll that trailer for Dead Man's Blood. We'll be back after this.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Dave.
Okay.
What?
What do you mean, what? Why do you sound slutty?
I was trying something new. You didn't like it?
No. No, I did not. Did you think it sounded good?
And this is Dave.
Alright, we're from Sequel This, a show where we attempt to write sequels to some of your favorite movies, such as Ghostbusters 3, Goonies 2, and Gremlins 3.
Well, you can check out all of our shows over at sequelthis.podbean.com. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, all the major pod places.
And if you can't find an episode that interests you, or you have a great suggestion, or a pitch yourself, we want to hear it from you. So please, email us at sequelthis@gmail.com and drop us a line.
And remember to flash it out.
What's wrong with you?
Everything and nothing.
A family discovers the key that could end their journey.
Sam McColt made a gun. He made it for a hunter. A man like us. They say this gun can kill anything.
Like the demon.
But it lies in the hands of an unspeakable evil.
Vampires?
Only 3 episodes left until the shocking season finale.
I'll break his neck.
Fresh Supernatural on the WB Thursday.
Okay, Katie, why don't you take it away with Dead Man's Blood?
So the plot synopsis for Dead Man's Blood, it was directed by Tony Warmby, written by Catherine Humphreys and John Chabon. The original air date was April 20th, 2006. So when an old vampire hunter is targeted by a group of vampires, he tries to attack them with an old Colt pistol, but is killed before he can fire a shot. Returning to the nest, the vampire Kate, Anne Openshaw, gives the Colt to her mate, the leader Luther, who's played by Warren Christie. When Dean recognizes the murdered hunter's name in the newspaper, he and Sam head to Boulder, Colorado, and discover a letter addressed to their father, who suddenly returns. The letter reveals to him that the gun is mystical and capable of killing anything. Realizing that they can use it to finally kill Azazel, Old Yellow Eyes, the demon that's responsible for their mother's death, the Winchesters capture Kate and attempt to trade her to Luther in exchange for the gun. John makes the trade while Sam and Dean rescue the vampire's victims under orders to leave afterwards. During the negotiation, Luther attacks John and the brothers intervene, killing most of the remaining vampires. John retrieves the gun, and the legend of the Colt is proven to be true as he shoots Luther dead. Kate and another female vampire flee, and John finally accepts that the Winchesters are stronger as a family and invites Sam and Dean to join him in hunting Azazel. So what do you think, Mr. Mann?
I actually like this episode a lot. Again, this episode, like the previous episode, has so many layers, and especially the dynamic that you see between Sam and John later on in the episode. I mean, to me, I like the vampires. And this is the first time that actually vampires are even mentioned in the Supernatural universe, because there's one scene where Sam and Dean are in it, and then John says, "Oh, it must be vampires." And Dean goes, "Vampires? They don't exist. it's pretend. Yeah. It's made up." He goes, "No. Because other hunters such as Daniel Elkins, who was the old man who got murdered in the beginning of the episode, thought they extinguished them. They were thought to be extinct up until this point." And I really like the vampire's nest. I thought that was kind of cool as well, that the vampires are kind of like, they hunt in packs. And I thought that was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I like how they call it a nest. It's not like a group or whatever. It's a nest.
Well, you know why they call it a nest? It's because technically they're bats, right? And bats make nests. No, they're like birds, maybe? True. Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Bats usually hang upside down, but anyway.
Yeah, you know what's other fun thing is that, like, one of my kids, I don't know what episode we were watching, but there was murder involved, and then right after, like, a flock of crows goes by, and she goes, "Mom, it's a murder of crows."
Oh, wow. Like,
"Oh, you're so clever." So, anyways, getting back to the story.
Yes.
You know, I like, in the beginning, I noticed, like, okay, so they got the old guy, which I forget his name, it escapes me.
Daniel Elkins. That's the character's
okay,
name.
Okay, so Daniel Elkins, he's, like, sitting at the bar, putting in his notes or whatever, and he notices the nest of vampires coming, and he, like, totally, like, skips out the back door.
Yeah.
And then she, like, she follows him out and gets him to the house, and they, you know, of course they do what they do, but it's,
yeah, they break interesting. They break in through a skylight or something, I want to say, from the,
yeah,
in the house.
Like what do you call it? Yeah, skylight. But later on, John talks about how they catch your scent for life, and I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah, that was kind of cool, and a different kind of like twist on an old vampire lore. And what I also loved about John coming back, he goes, "I'm going to tell you, most of the vampire lore is crap." He goes, "Sun doesn't hurt them." I'm like, you know, stake through the heart. I forget what he says about stake through heart. I think it says it slows them down, but it doesn't kill them. And the only way you can really kill them is to decapitate them, is to chop their head off.
Yeah.
And he goes, sunlight doesn't, you know, it gives them a bad sunburn, but it doesn't do anything to them really. And they're weaker during the day, but it's not like they're completely vulnerable either.
Yeah, exactly. And I like how he kind of like, so after the boys investigate the scene at the house, you know, John kind of like almost sneaks up on them, and they're like, "What the hell, Dad?" Yeah. And as they go around, they're doing their thing. He finds a tooth on the ground, and that's how he knows it's vampires. And you know, Sam starts to question everything.
Well, because there's a scene where you see the nest. Gang attack this couple on the road, and I thought it was pretty cool too. And that's where John actually finds a tooth because the police are investigating a murder, not so much, but just missing people, the missing car, and I guess there was some blood because the vampires took the bodies away. So yeah, it's some sort of crime scene.
Yeah, I forgot since, you know, they were talking about this, so when they're investigating the house, they find these, like, this scratching on the floor or something, so they take a rubbing of it, and they realize it's for a post office box, and that's where they get the letter, and when John comes in, you know, and it's kind of like, here, this is what it is.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, Sam is just... He's really angry. He's so angry in this episode.
Well, you can tell there's definitely a history of them butting heads. And kind of thinking back on all of the previous episodes up to this point, where they both Sam and Dean at other times throughout the different episodes were reaching out for their father, and he was nowhere to be found. Even when Dean was on his deathbed, a few episodes ago, when it was heart, and where they made it. And everything, and nothing. It, like, radio silence. Like, they couldn't find him. And I guess I would be kind of pissed and upset, too.
Yeah, because he just shows up out of nowhere. And, I mean, it's, you know, they describe it as a yes man, or yes sir, no sir kind of a relationship. And I get, like, you know, trusting your parents and doing what you're told. But, yeah, I mean, like, fill him in a little bit and...
Right, yeah.
And I get, but also it's like he's the team leader, and, you know, in some ways you should just trust where they're going with it. And we'll fill you in on the way, but then, you know, he pulls up and stops John in the middle of the road and was like, tell me what's going on now. And, you know.
Yeah.
Really plays that angry kid.
Right. And the thing is, I can see where Sam's coming from, and I can also see where John is coming from, but John doesn't do a very good job at, you know, he's more of a, you know, I'm the general, you're the soldier, you do what I tell you, and that's it.
Yeah.
And Sam and Dean are like, well, that may have worked for when we were kids, and more so Sam than Dean, but Dean slowly comes around to he goes, like, we're partners now, we've been hunting monsters and doing things while you've been MIA, and we should have more input into this instead of just do this, stand there, and, you know, that's it. And it's not right. Yes, sir, you know, follow my orders kind of thing. It's like, let's talk about this, let's discuss the best way to attack the issue instead of just, or attack the plant or problem instead of just, you know, do what I tell you because I said so. I'm like, that works when they're younger because they don't know, but now they have experience, and they know what to do and when to do it most of the time.
Yeah.
That doesn't fly.
And then, you know, yeah, it is. It you know, it's like, I don't need to explain everything to my kids, and usually they trust what I say, but sometimes I'm like, no, this is why we're doing this. If you know, and if you want to complain about it here, this is why I'm doing this, and this is why you should be doing that. Do you understand? And then they're kind of like, oh... So I think as kids they have a little bit more faith, you know, and why I'm doing stuff. But when you're an adult and somebody's just barking orders at you, especially when, like, he was insulting Dean's car, he's like, "You better take care of this thing," you know.
Or I'll take it. I didn't give it to you so you could destroy. I didn't give it to you so you could destroy something like that.
Exactly. And it's like, well, that was kind of shitty because Dean is what in this episode. Even my kids were asking, like, "How old are these guys in this episode?" I was like, well, they're probably in their 20s.
Yeah, they say in the pilot episode, Dean is like, they said 20, he goes like, dude, I'm 26. So I think he's like, you know, mid to late 20s, probably 26, 27 years old. And Sam is probably about a little younger, probably about 23, 24. Because Dean was like a toddler or a little over a toddler when Sam was a baby. So
I think there's a 4-year difference. Yeah. I would say he was 3 or 4.
Yeah, so if Dean is roughly maybe 26, 27, Sam is probably 22, 23. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, he just got out of college, and he was pre-law or whatever. Right. So, yeah, I would say, I would estimate the same. But, yeah, and it's like, you know, you're not, I mean, 22, you're still kind of young, so I get that. But, you know, I think even, like, Dean starts to back his brother up, and in the end, I believe John kind of comes around and is like, oh, yeah, you have been doing stuff. I did send you on these, you know.
Yeah, monster hunts. These different monster hunts.
Yeah, that's where.
Yeah, I
makes a revelation of like, yeah, I'm not your boss. I'm your father, and I shouldn't treat you like shit.
Yeah, I should have been more your father instead of like a drill instructor. Basically, is what he's saying.
Drill sergeant.
And there was this really really great scene that I really liked, and it's when John sends Dean out to get the dead man's blood. He tells him to go to a morgue and get like some dead man's blood. And then you get that scene after the confrontation between John and Sam, and they're in the hotel room, and John is like cleaning weapons, he's cleaning the guns, he's cleaning whatever, and Sam's sitting there, and they're having this kind of heart to heart. Again, that's what I mentioned at the beginning of our review of this episode, that this episode has so many levels, and it goes so deep. You see another bonding moment where he mentions that at Sam's birth, he opened a checking account or a savings account for both Dean and Sam, and he would put $100 every month into that savings account. And he never wanted this life for, you know, Sam and Dean. He wanted them to, you know, he wanted Sam to go to school, and he wanted Dean to do whatever. He didn't want this life for his boys, but that's just the way it happened, and how what had happened where he was, after the death of the mother, he goes, and then Sam's like, well, whatever happened to my college fund, or my savings account? He goes, I used it for ammo, and they just kind of had like a great little like chuckle. They had that a moment,
yeah.
And we come to realize that the reason why Don and Sam butt heads so much is because they're so alike, not different, and yeah. While Dean is a good little soldier, he always does what, you know, Daddy tells him. Sam has a tendency to, I don't want to say think for himself, but think more about the bigger picture, I want to say. I think that's a better way of stating it. But
yeah, like the grand scheme, where Dean is like,
fight what's
like
in front of you.
His dad.
Yeah, and he's about fighting what's in front of you, while Sam is always, you know, he's thinking one or two steps ahead. Dean is like, at this point, you know, just punching whatever it needs to be punched in front of him.
Yeah.
So,
like, he's a boxer and Sam's a chess player.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why, and I think that's why their relationship works so well. But as a unit, as a team, because it's an ebb and flow between, you know, punching and thinking.
Yeah, it's definitely complementary to each other.
Yeah. And so I really enjoyed that scene. I thought that was fantastic. I think when they go into the nest and they start, you know, throwing down, I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, I think was it Sam goes to try and save somebody, and then the whole, like, nest wakes up.
Yeah.
And that's when, like, the shit hits the fan.
That's because was it Kate and I think it Luther turn the lady they abducted, and that they ended up actually, you know, feasting on her husband or boyfriend. So Luther is expanding his nest in the love triangle, menage a trois style, with Kate.
And it's funny, like, he kind of scolds her in the beginning, like, why did you do this? There's other ones like him.
Yeah, you're gonna bring many more hunters. He goes, because she thought she was doing a good job by bringing him the colt and saying we killed Daniel Elkins. He's like, well, now you cut off the head of the snake. Now we've got, you know, two more hunters to deal with. Not that knowing, you know, basically whatever mess you made, you just doubled it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, and I thought at some point in this episode they would just come to some kind of understanding. Like, I didn't remember it very well, but I was like, oh, maybe they'll just come to an understanding. They get the cult, he'll go on his way, they'll leave each other alone, it'll be like, maybe that's how it works out. But it really doesn't. Like, you think that it's going to kind of work out that way when they decide to make the trade for Kate, the vampire, for the cult.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of like, that's when it just really, like, spins around, and, you know, the boys are taking care of the nest while he's got maybe like five or six other vampires, and he goes to pick up the John goes to pick up the cult, and that's when they kind of overtake him a little bit. Yeah. But then, you know, of course the boys show up with their arrows and their dead man's blood and save the day. And then all of a sudden, John shoots Luther.
Mm-hmm.
And you really get to see how that cult works.
Yes.
And it's almost like, that was like, kind of like this very intense, and I mean, for me it wasn't terrifying, but for others I think it can be at that level of, you know, terror, where it's like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
This gun is like, you know, this is the business right here.
All right.
And you see him. Okay, go ahead.
No, go. Go on, finish.
Oh, I was going to say that you, like, you. So John takes the pistol and they do kind of that slow-mo Matrix kind of a thing. You see him get shot in the head, and then all of a sudden it's like this dark, stony kind of break in his head, and he just kinds to, real in this pain, and like there's this, like the sound effects and everything start to happen, and he's kind of lurching and wrenching, and then like this blackness is like struggling to be taken from him, and then all of a sudden it like, it's like poof, it disappears, and he like, you know, crumbles to the ground.
Yeah, there's like a flash of light, there's a flash of light, like his soul's being like shot out of his body. So
yeah,
it was a very cool effect, and I like the way Luther kind of like almost what's the word I'm looking for? Oh gosh, he's talking about it's like he's telling Kate what happens. This gun could kill anything. It's because Kate's like, oh, that old man tried to use a gun on us. That would never work. The old guns don't work on us. He was like, not this gun, Kate. This gun can kill anything or destroy us. And then she witnesses firsthand. It's like, oh, it's like what's the book term? It's I've used a terminology before, but it's escaping me. But it's like he's like. Foreseeing his future, or foreseeing a possible future where they have to go up against this cult and he dies.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing. Thank you. Gosh, I knew the word. It was stuck on the top of my tongue. But yes, he was foreshadowing the tip of my tongue. Yeah, there you go. Wow.
I like words.
I like words.
And even though, like, my vocabulary probably on these things don't seem. It doesn't seem like, because I say like super and awesome a lot, but no, I got you on my vocabulary. I got your back, man.
You get my vocab.
Yeah, I do. I got a thesaurus in the living room. It's like one of my favorite things. Like, you guys think I'm a nerd. I don't care.
Yes. So this whole episode was pretty good. I mean, I don't know. I still like the previous episode a little bit better, but I do like the fact that John, we see the boys actually fighting together with John.
Like, the whole, you know, they get reunited. Like,
right.
The whole Winchester family comes together. So I'm kind of excited to see what happens for the next couple of episodes. But yeah, I like this episode. It wasn't as amazing, in my opinion, as the last, mm-hmm. but I really enjoyed it. And I like the title.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you're kind of like Dead Man's Blood. What the heck? And then you get through, you know, the episode, and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you don't know anything about the episode, it almost kind of sounds like a pirate cartoon, or not a pirate cartoon, a pirate television show, a pirate movie, like Dead Man's Blood. You know, like,
yeah.
I would assume pirate or something, High Seas Adventures, not a vampire episode. But
no. I had remembered about the Dead Man's Blood, so I was kind of like, oh yeah, this is going to be a good one.
Yes. So, I give us an episode a thumbs up. What about you, Katie? Do you?
Definitely a thumbs up.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Well, I guess that's just to the songs used in this episode. And again, thank you to the fine people over at TuneFind.com. Oh, I'm sorry. We should also mention that they let the girls escape. Do you know that? Remember that?
Oh, yeah, the two of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
which was very, very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kate and the newly turned vampire, I forget what her name is, but she's the one that they kidnapped on the road. And they turned,
right.
And then Luther turned into a vampire.
Yeah, and I don't think we see them later on.
No. It's kind of like, because it's mentioned that these vampires would catch the scent of the Winchester. So obviously John and Sam and Dean all have targets on their back from at least Kate and this other vampire. So I was always wondering if Kate would ever come back, and so far she has not. And I don't think they
know. Maybe.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say maybe they learned their lesson. And that's why.
Maybe. Yeah. So
because they, you know, it's like you see, you know, these two women see, like, holy shit, that gun. Look at what it did to Luther. I don't want any part of that. So yeah. That was my assumption. And as far as, like, them not, you know, having a repeat episode or coming back up again or not even wanting to, like,
tangle with them,
avenge their death, like Luther's death, is because that gun is just.
Yeah,
pretty
kind of keep him away.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
That's a nice little deterrent.
Yeah, I'd say so. Watching your beloved that Luther had lived for like 300 or 400 years, and they've been together for about the same amount of time. Yeah, I'd say that could probably be one to just say, yeah, fuck it, I'm not dealing with it. Let's just go.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm done. That's it. But, no, anyway, the songs used in the episode, thank you to the, songs used in the episode, thanks to the fine people over at TuneFind.com. One was The House is Rockin' by Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble. Two, Strange Face of Love by Tito and Tarantula. Number three, Searching for the Truth as Heard on the Prison Break television show by Brian Keith Nutter. Number four, Trailer Trashed by Mouse. And finally, number five, Fragments of the Past, done by CMA. So those are the five songs used during the episode. And the fun facts that I have are as follows. There are four. Okay. Number one, the Vancouver Police Department, number one, the Vancouver Police closed down one of its key locations, Stanley Park, when it was thought that a sniper might be at large. It actually turned out to be one of the crew's aluminum briefcases, which some passing tourist mistook for a gun case. Number two, the inscription on the cult is Latin, so I'm going to try to pronounce it. It's Non Timbo Mala, which means I fear no evil. And number three, in the scene at the vampire's lair, the song being played is Strange Face of Love, an homage to and directly from the soundtrack of From Dusk Till Dawn from 1996. Number four, Luther's tattoo, Number four, Luther's tattoo roughly translates to "Hey, you guys," a possible nod to The Goonies, a popular 80s film. There are many 80s references in the show since the boys grew up in the 80s, and one of the main references being 80s rock. So there you go with the four fun facts for Dead Man's Blood. So, Katie, do you have anything else you'd like to add before we bounce out of here today?
I did. I actually, because you're talking about the music, and I don't know if this is like it or not, but I feel like this is the episode where they introduce that music, you know, where they go, dun dun. Do you know what I'm saying? That, yeah. Like that end of the credits kind of music?
Oh, yeah, the ominous tones at the very end.
Yeah.
That's
so I don't know if that was like this is where it started or whatever, but that's something like I really enjoyed. I wish I could find it and play it for you, but I'm not very sing-songy.
don't sell yourself short. I know you are.
I mean, I can sing a song, but like I can't like do the, you know, the music and stuff. Like it just know it goes dun dun in the beginning, and that's
right.
Like, you know, and it has that little guitar riff.
Right. It's almost like a Supernatural Law and Order kind of, like, intro and outro.
Yeah, right? Like, they had the chung chung, and this is, like, the Supernatural kind of, like, it becomes, like, a segue or the end credits kind of thing. You know, it's just the way they use it. So I'm not sure if this is the first episode where they started doing that. I haven't noticed it in previous episodes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be something that if I knew for sure, I could go further into, but so, it's like that supernatural music I really like.
So if you dear listeners know the answer to that question, please feel free to email us or send us a Facebook message.
Yeah, call us out if we're wrong or if we're right. Like, I want to know.
Yes. Oh, well, that about does it for this episode of Men of Letters. Be sure to tune in next time when Katie and I rewatch, relive, review the final two episodes of Season 1. I cannot believe it. We're already at the end of Season 1. Episode 21, Salvation, and Episode 22, Devil's Trap. You're not going to want to miss out on that one. So for Katie, I'm Tim. Thanks for listening to Men of Letters. Good night, jerk!
Son of a bitch!
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for tuning in to Men of Letters over at the Speakeasy Podcast Network, where talk is cheap and so are we. You can follow the Speakeasy Podcast Network over on the Facebook. Just type in the Speakeasy Podcast Network in the search bar and we'll pop right up. Be sure to like the page to keep up with all the great shows that are on the Speakeasy Podcast Network. Also, if you would like to reach out and contact MOL, you can drop us a line over at our official email address at menoflettersupernatural@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Also, the Speakeasy Podcast Network is on the Twitter machine over at the Speakeasy One. So be sure to check out the Speakeasy Podcast Network on Twitter. Thank you and have a great night.
Thank you for listening to Men of Letters.